When we got married, we had two fairly small houses, both full of the things that we had accumulated during the last 20 years or 25 years. Now, most of our possessions were not particularly valuable, but there were items we'd inherited from family members. There were items with a sentimental significance fit into one house. Moreover, we couldn't easily use two washing machines and three freezers, so we had to get rid of some stuff. And it meant most dispose of some surplus items. Well, the next place we lived was a four-bedroomed house in Leeds, and we managed to fit everything we had into that house, though we did need to extend the kitchen, because if you know anything about houses in Leeds, their kitchens are tiny. You had to choose between whether you had the washing machine or the cooker, because you couldn't possibly have both in the kitchen. So we extended the kitchen, and then that worked. Well, after Leeds, we moved to Malton in North Yorkshire. And there we had a three-bedroomed house, so is it just a bit smaller. And although it had some things, just didn't fit. And then we came here, and our current house, well, it was sold as having four bedrooms. It certainly has two. The third has a dining table lives. So once again, we had to get rid of some surplus, this time lots of books. And we certainly didn't need three Greek New Testaments or teach yourself Hebrew and French and a whole load of other things that we had two or three of still. But it makes you ask, you know, what's important in your life? Is it the stuff you possess? Now, in our reading, we see the author, described as the king, exploring various things that he thought might make him happy. Evidently, just being king wasn't enough. He said, "I will test you with pleasure to find out what's good." But that proved meaningless. I'll try laughter, I'll try wine, I'll try embracing folly, a whole load of things. Let's have the first picture. And imagine some of those over-the-top student parties, or the parties of our youth, where the revellers lose control of themselves, or perhaps, if anything, a good time. And these are things we see around us on a daily basis. They're things that make up our news and current affairs programmes. So having fun. And then the king tried working hard, or at least organising other people to work hard. I don't think he actually did the manual labour himself. He built houses, and that sounds like a nice creative sort of thing to do. After all, everyone needs a place to live. But it says he built houses for himself. Next picture. I just read about this guy. He was the former president of Congo, or Zaire, from 1965 to 1997. He's called Mobutu Sese Seko. He may pronounce it differently. But this is him. His name is associated with dictatorship, opulence, nepotism, embezzlement, and misrule. He came to power after the country obtained independence from Belgium in 1960, and he was its president for over 30 years. He orchestrated the assassination of the democratically elected prime minister and statesman, Patrice Lumumba, and that enabled him to take over the country's leadership. But what stands out most is his vast, lavish palace, which he built in his remote rainforest-enveloped home village called Gbadolite. Excuse my pronunciation. But the palace was estimated to have cost £250 million. It featured an international airport, a four-star hotel, a nightclub, and swimming pools. It was stuffed with Venetian chandeliers, monotique French furniture. He apparently hired over 1,000 expensively uniformed staff to maintain the palace and to entertain his foreign guests and dignitaries. At the same time, the country's economy crumbled under his rule. The palace's cellars burst with thousands of bottles of assorted champagne and vintage wine. It sounds a bit to me like the description of this man in Ecclesiastes, who was doing everything he could to spend his money on things that might make him happy. The king in our reading planted vineyards, parks and gardens, perhaps orchards for growing fruit. But did that make him happy? We could do the few reservoirs today, couldn't we? We had extremely hot weather, which apparently has driven the demand for water up as people filled their paddling pools and irrigated their lawns. One utility company has banned the use of hose pipes to ensure the drinking water supply. Others are feeling the pressure, not the water pressure, I think. The news tells us there's a stark warning of a squeeze that's likely to occur more regularly as heat waves, changes in rainfall patterns, and the century-old infrastructure is stressed. So our king built reservoirs, but the reservoirs were intended to water his orchards. They were not for the good of the general public. But did that make him happy? He says not. He acquired possessions and wealth. What might you do if you won the lottery or inherited a fortune? Next picture. This is someone called Aid Goodchild. He's a factory worker from Hereford, and he won the lottery in 2019. He is 58 years old, and he won £71 million and a few more, over £71 million. He told a news conference that he will retire after 24 hours as a metal worker in Hereford. He'll travel the world and buy a home with a swimming pool. Being single, he denied he was suddenly more attractive overnight. He said, "It's just my wallet that's more attractive." He said, "I read the prize amount again and realised that it was actually 71 million and just one winner, me." It was then I called my mum and dad, and their reaction was one of complete shock. I still don't think it sunk in for them. His dream holiday destinations include the Grand Canyon and the Pyramids. "I'm not one of those winners who is going to say this win won't change me," he said. "It will, or I'll give it a good go. There'll be no more shift work for me." Our writer in Ecclesiastes let wealth change his life too. He had male and female slaves, so lots of people to work for him, to look after his house and his gardens. He had lots of farm animals to be looked after by the slaves. He had lots of silver and gold from kings and the surrounding provinces, perhaps brought as tributes, brought by subservient rulers and nations. The wealth described here seems to be similar to that of King Solomon, which is described in some detail in 1 Kings. Solomon, the king, had an alliance with King Hiram of Lebanon, and says Hiram sent the king 120 talents of gold. And then it says that they sailed to Ophir and brought back 420 talents of gold, which they delivered to King Solomon. And then the Queen of Sheba came along from the south, from Africa, arriving at Jerusalem with a very great caravan with camels carrying spices, large quantities of gold and precious stones. She came to Solomon and talked with him about all she had on her mind, and she gave the king 120 talents of gold, large quantities of spices, precious stones. Never again were so many spices brought in as those the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. You can see his wealth mounting up. Hiram's ships brought gold from Ophir, and from there they brought great cargoes of almug wood, whatever that is, and precious stones. And it goes on, the weight of the gold that Solomon received yearly was 666 talents, that's every year. All King Solomon's goblets were gold. All the household articles in the palace of the Forest of Lebanon, that's Solomon's house, were pure gold. Nothing was made of silver, because silver was considered of little value in Solomon's days. And then it goes along with the ships of Hiram. Once every 3 years, they returned carrying gold, silver, ivory, and apes and baboons. I think they'd been to Africa. Everyone who came to Solomon brought a gift: articles of gold and silver, robes, weapons, spices, and horses and mules. So you can see how the king's wealth was mounting up. A reward, perhaps. And a harem, an inexhaustible supply of women. It says he had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. But did it make him happy? He became popular. He says, "I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me." You know, there are world leaders today who are incredibly popular. It's not necessarily because they're good. It's because they have some sort of charisma that makes people follow them. They give their name to great projects that will make them look good. They become like a brand name. And Solomon was like that. But at the end of all this, he says, I denied myself nothing that my eyes desired. But it was all meaningless. Solomon, you remember, was noted for his wisdom. We still speak about having the wisdom of Solomon today. He talks about wisdom, but then he talks about madness and folly, stupidity, we might say. He says he rejoices in wisdom. It's a good thing. But he says in the end, it doesn't matter whether you're wise or stupid, whether you're mad or sane, your end is the same. What's the point of it all, he says. It all just leads to despair. You know, this part of Ecclesiastes reminds me of one of those stories that Jesus told. It's in Luke 12, so Jesus told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest, and he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take it easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. We know that story, don't we? And that sounds just like that bit of Ecclesiastes. But Jesus went on. But God said to him, you fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? And this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich towards God. And then we come to that last bit in chapter 5, where the writer recognizes that all the things he's accumulated are given to him by God. He says, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their lives because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. So God has given us all that we have. And Solomon, you will remember, at the beginning of his life, the beginning of his reign, asked God for wisdom. And that was a gift, along with all the things that Solomon possessed. But what about his attitude? What about his use of those gifts? What about our use of the gifts that we have? Paul wrote to Timothy. Timothy was a young pastor looking after a new church. And Paul said, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Jesus once said, sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. So what's really important in life? It's nice to be happy, but is that what we should be aiming for? The Westminster Shorter Catechism says that the chief end of man is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. Last week in another church, I talked about the last in the series on Revelation, which you did a couple of weeks back. All through Revelation, you may have noticed there are all these people wearing white robes, and they are always commended. They are commended because they've had their sins forgiven and because they've been faithful followers of Jesus. None of them were there in the heavenly throne room because they did good things, though they probably did. None of them are there because they were great supporters of the local church, though they probably were. None of those people wearing white robes in Revelation are there because they were good people. None of them were there because they were great preachers, although some of them may have been. None of them were there because they were great philanthropists, although some of them may have been. None of them were there because they amassed great wealth, although some of them might have done. In the grand scheme of things, what we possess, the achievements of life, are not so important. The thing that matters is that we should trust in Jesus. We should trust in him to forgive our sins. We should have him at the centre of our lives and be faithful to him. Amen.